Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to The Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We are joined by Fox Sports college football analyst Joel Klatt, who will be on the announced team for the Big Ten title game between Ohio State and my alma mater, Wisconsin, this Saturday night on Fox. Joel, how are you doing this week?
Doing great. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. So as I said, I went to Wisconsin. I'm going to this game as a fan. I'm pretty excited about it. The line right now is Ohio State by 5 or 6. I've been watching most of these two teams' games this year, all of the Wisconsin games, and I feel like the line should be even, but it's a little bit, in my estimation, tilted by the 59-0 result from a few years ago. How do you see this game shaking out?
Yeah, you know, and candidly, I think lines are always interesting when it comes to college football, maybe even more so than professional, the National Football League, just because fan bases are more passionate and more invested into college teams, and that affects betting patterns. And remember, lines aren't set necessarily for the game as much as they are for the money that's going to come in on them. So when you've got a large fan base that most people are incredibly passionate about, sometimes those lines are swayed towards Ohio State. I think the same happens with Alabama, the same happens with USC. So it's interesting, you know, you bring up the number and what you think it should be, and I always say that there's probably a 2-point bump for USC, Alabama, and Ohio State when it comes to Vegas. So that's just an interesting, I guess, little tidbit about that. Now, as far as the game, I can't wait to see how it plays out. I think Wisconsin has been a little bit of the stepchild of college football this season, that everyone just wants to harp on their schedule. And fact is that their schedule and their resume is as good as anybody's out there. And one of the things that I look at is the strength of schedule, and people want to rip on that, but it's basically in the same neighborhood as Alabama's. And when you look at Wisconsin, they've got 3 wins over the Sagarin top 30. Alabama's only got 2. So this standard bearer of college football being Alabama, you know, I don't think Wisconsin is that far off to what they are during the course of the season. Plus, Wisconsin's been playing some great football of late. I'd say the last 6 quarters have been some of the most impressive that I've seen them play all season long. And then from the Ohio State perspective, I got to tell you, they ride the wave of inconsistency, certainly. But when they're playing their best, there's not many teams that are better than Ohio State in the entire country. Now, they'll have times when they're not playing well. And we saw that against Iowa, and that we saw them, you know, struggle with a great player in Baker Mayfield. So for me, it's kind of which Ohio State will show up, and that matchup against, I think, Wisconsin is going to be pretty epic.
It's pretty early in the week, but do you have any bearing on JT Barrett's health? And if he is in or out, does that even really make a difference for Ohio State?
Certainly it will make a difference. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to make a difference in a good or bad way, but it'll certainly make a difference in the style of play that they're going to be trying to use and the game plan that they're going to be trying to use offensively. Now, I will say, throughout his history, when Coach Meyer lists a player as probable or says that a player is probable in his Monday press conference, there is a really good chance that that player is going to play. That's just kind of how the history of the way that he talks about, and he's more open about injuries than most guys out there. But so I do expect Barrett to play. As far as what I'm expecting, I don't necessarily rule out the possibility of Haskins playing a little bit, even if Barrett's healthy, just because of the style that we saw last week, they were a between the hash marks, run-oriented, quarterback run-oriented team with some play action, getting the ball to the tight ends and the crossing routes with JT Barrett. As soon as Haskins came in the game, they were a little bit more vertical in the run game, vertical meaning kind of downhill, and they were throwing the ball outside of the hash marks. And I think when you pair those two together, they threaten the defense to more degrees than you do with one or the other. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility that we could see both guys and Ohio State trying to capitalize on every potential style that they have and game plan that they have to attack this Wisconsin defense, which right now is the best in the country.
You mentioned the last six quarters that Wisconsin has played, and a big difference in that has been the performance of Alex Hornibrook. Now, all season, he's been good for like one or two, just like, what the hell are you doing, throws a game. But he's also made some pretty good throws as well.
That is spoken like a true Wisconsin fan. I love it, right?
Well, I think anybody who watches him could be like, why is he throwing directly to the defensive back with no receiver in the area? I don't understand. But he has, between the hash marks, he has a pretty good accuracy. And he had a touchdown pass against Michigan in a game that you were calling that was threading the needle between two defenders. I think he's almost a little bit underrated because his bad passes get magnified, but his good ones don't get enough credit. Do you think there's anything to that?
No doubt about it. I think that you hit the nail on the head. You know, he threw some unbelievable passes against Michigan, and if he wouldn't have started playing well, they were going to lose that game. You know, obviously it's the most important position, but he was the catalyst to what they were able to do against Michigan in that second half. After he threw the interception to Devin Bush, which, by the way, was a pretty good throw and an unbelievable play by Devin Bush, the linebacker for Michigan. But after that point, I mean, he was brilliant. And you're right, he is much more accurate in between the hash marks than he is outside of the hash marks. But the ball he threw to A.J. Taylor for the touchdown, it's kind of this double post concept. And I can tell you from a quarterback's perspective, it's very difficult because you're basically having to throw it right at the back of the defender that's going with the inside post. And it's a counterintuitive throw because it looks like you're throwing it right at the defender. And what you have to do is trust that he's going to continue to move with that inside post route and that your outside post route or that double post is going to come in and kind of clear out in that vacated zone that you're throwing the ball into. So it was a great anticipatory throw. It was right on the money, and that was a huge touchdown in that game and a real turning point. Because remember, I believe it was just a few plays later that they knocked Peters out of the game, Brandon Peters. And that was those four plays right there were kind of the whole swing of the Wisconsin-Michigan game. And it all stemmed from the fact that Hornibrook started making some plays, and he made some unbelievable throws over the middle of the field.
I hope no either NFL or college football administrators are listening to this right now, but Jim Leonard, I know it's just his first year as a coordinator and only his second year in coaching, but the performance of this unit and the fact that he was almost a coach on the field for Rex Ryan all those years in the NFL, and Rex called him the smartest player he's ever coached, I'm a little bit surprised he's not getting any name even in murmurs for some of these head coaching searches. When do you think that he's going to start becoming a candidate for some of these mid to high level jobs that open up every year?
Well, a couple of different things. One, you're right. And two, it is difficult to think to yourself, hey, we're going to give the keys to the castle to a guy that's been a coach for 2 years. I think it's pretty amazing that he's even a coordinator at this point, but he's done a remarkable job. You're exactly right. He's one of the smartest guys when talking about football that you're ever going to see out there. What I love about him is that he comes from a player's perspective. So let me give you like a couple of the things that he told us in our meeting is that he coaches for the players to play physical and fast rather than coaching them to be perfect. And that is a very player-oriented thing. He said he learned a ton when he was obviously with the Rex Ryan style of defense, but also when he's playing for Baltimore, and he's got Ed Reed and he's got Ray Lewis right there, and he sees that these two players that could be arguably considered in the top two or three in their position all time, that they would struggle and make mistakes with certain technical aspects of the game. right, that they weren't perfect. And it was hard for them at times to play with the right shoulder leverage and so on and so forth. And so he thought to himself, well, why in the world would I try to coach a college player to be perfect and harp on him for something that Ed Reed or Ray Lewis can't even do? Well, that's a perspective that can only be born through the lens of a player and the lens of a player that's played at the highest levels and been trying to execute the same things that these kids are executing. So when you're a Wisconsin player now, let's say you're Dakota Dixon or TJ Edwards or any of these guys that have had great years, and you've got a defensive coordinator that has been there at the top levels and played with the greatest players of all time, and he says to you, hey, TJ, Ray can't even do that. But you know what Ray did? He played fast and physical. So whichever shoulder you hit that guard with, do it with everything you've got. Well, now TJ Edwards is totally free to play in a reaction mode, to play fast, to play physical, and that makes up for a lot of little technical errors. So I know I gave you kind of a different style of answer for the question that you asked. Do I think that Jim Leonard is going to be a head coaching candidate in the near future? Absolutely. But one of the reasons why he's having so much success this early in his career is because of the fact that he was just on the field. And he relates to these players and the things that they're seeing and going through maybe better than anybody in America. And I think it's one of the reasons why Wisconsin has been so good. And right now they're the number one total defense in the land.
Well, yeah, I just look at like Sean McVay, who is younger than Leonard. Obviously, he's been coaching longer because he wasn't a pro player for many years like Leonard was. But I almost feel like this conventional wisdom has overrated experience and underrated the like competence and hungriness of some of these young coaches, and that McVay is going to switch the paradigm of that a little bit.
Well, you're right, and I would actually bring up a different guy just because it's the college ranks, Lincoln Riley. You know, he's the first guy that I've sat down with, a head coach, I should say, the first head coach that I've interviewed that I'm older than he is. And it was an interesting, you know, I mean, that was a shift for me. I'm like, oh, wow, here we go. You know, like, this is going to start to happen more and more during the course of my career until eventually I'm going to be older than everybody that I sit down with, right? So, or at least I hope I can have that type of longevity. You know, we'll see. Now, let me draw a bit of a difference between the three guys that you brought up. So McVay here in L.A. with the Rams, you've got Lincoln Riley with Oklahoma, and you've got Jim Leonard, the defense coordinator at Wisconsin. The difference is that McVay and Lincoln Riley have been in the coaching ranks long enough where they are able to have a really quality staff around them. Now, Lincoln is a little bit different because that staff was essentially Bob's staff that he just was able to come in there, and it was kind of a ready-made deal, like an easy-bake oven for head coach. And he's done a remarkable job in their season and likely headed to the playoffs with a win over TCU. For McVay, he's been in the ranks long enough to where he has the relationships to build a staff from scratch. And he did some really smart things, like bring Wade Phillips, a guy with a lot of head coaching experience, defensive coordinating experience, and overall just a plethora of years of experience in the National Football League. Well, Jim hasn't quite had the time to do that. And so I think what people will be trying to avoid is what Cliff Kingsbury went through at Texas Tech. He got a head job very early, very young. Well, he didn't have that bandwidth to hire a great staff, so he went through some real growing pains in the first two, three seasons of his head coaching tenure at Texas Tech to try to find the right staff. And I think Jim would be in that mold if he got a job, let's say, for next year. Now, that being said, I think with his connections and the way that he's been going about this season in particular as a coordinator, I think in the very near future, maybe it's next season or the year after, where Jim could be a head coach and then hire a staff that would be really good both in recruiting and in on-field development and coaching.
Switching to the defensive coordinator on the other end of the sidelines, we're going to vehemently disagree on this for the next few minutes, but you're of the opinion that a grave injustice happened with what happened with Greg Schiano and Tennessee this past weekend. Can you explain your viewpoint on that?
Well, sure. I think that it has less to do with Greg specifically and more to do with this emotional wave that was created via some, you know, bloggers, essentially. And they created a false narrative because they didn't want him as their coach, and then they painted him as a monster. That's what I have a problem with. They cannot hire Greg or hire Greg. It's really not necessarily about him as much as the way that that fan base went about it. They got their pitchforks out, and they did something that I thought was highly hypocritical, and I just don't agree with it. And they followed a few people that, you know, their whole stance on issues around the globe and around the political spectrum are that we're not going to incite mobs and we're going to try to be fact-based and evidence-based. And then they did the exact opposite. They incited a mob around something that has no factual basis and totally uncorroborated report going back to the early 1990s. So that's what my problem was more surrounding. And they did it because they don't think he was a good coach based on some record of an overall record at Rutgers and a tenure that wasn't that great with the Miami Dolphins, when in retrospect, if you would just do a shred of research, you would know that Rutgers had had no success whatsoever in their program's history. Greg Schiano takes them to a point where they were a double-digit win team. They went to a bowl game year in and year out, and they were 8-9 wins during the last 4 or 5 years of his tenure. That's a remarkable program build and job by a head coach. And he didn't make it in the National Football League. Guess who else didn't make it in the National Football League? Nick Saban. So, one, they were off base on their opinion of him as a coach. And then the way that they went about it morally was completely unjust. And that's where my problem lies. And if people think that they know better than the administration and the football experts, that's fine. But then to spin it as some moral high ground, I think is a total fraud.
Okay, so I get all that, and here's my devil's advocate point on it. First of all, I think that the athletic director, John Curry, and Jimmy Haslam, who's reportedly been heavily involved in the coaching search, my understanding is that they tried to ram this through. There weren't any leaks that they were even considering Schiano or that he was a favorite for the job. And I think the reason that there were no leaks is and that they tried to get this done really quickly and that there was a report the same day that they were zeroing in on him that there could be an announcement that evening is that they understood that this decision would be wildly unpopular and they tried to get it through before a groundswell could block it. And to me, that indicates that they knew that they were going with a candidate that wasn't somebody who was going to resonate with the fan base. As far as what he accomplished at Rutgers, yeah, he built that program from nothing. He only had one top 25 finish in his tenure there. He never won the Big East. His last 3 or 4 years there weren't as good as his middle 3 or 4 years. And in Tampa, as you mentioned, it didn't go very well. The players almost had an open revolt. He had some pretty unsavory leaks about his quarterback, Josh Freeman, and there was the MRSA stuff there. I agree with you that the Tennessee fan base used the Penn State stuff against him because they didn't agree with his bona fides as a football coach. The Tennessee had that issue with Butch Jones a couple years ago where he allegedly accused a whistleblower of being a traitor to his teammates, and they had to settle a big Title IX lawsuit. The Tennessee Vol fans had a top 10 preseason program at the time, and their morality wasn't especially conspicuous then. So I think I agree with you that they used the Penn State thing as an excuse, but I don't know about the uncorroborated nature of that, because it's not like it was a rumor or a message board hearsay. This was the key witness in the Penn State case, Mike McQueary, who was discussing under oath. Now, I'll grant you that he was going secondhand there, but Schiano had a very, very lasting relationship with Jerry Sandusky. He emceed charity events for the Second Mile over a decade after Schiano left Penn State. Sandusky gave Schiano a big glowing on-record endorsement in the Bergen Record the day that Schiano was hired at Rutgers. And so I'm not willing to say that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Schiano knew this stuff and covered it up or anything of that nature. But I do think that I can understand from a Tennessee fan perspective why, if they don't believe that he's a slam dunk hire, this would push him over the edge in terms of we should get somebody else.
That's fine. You know, I think all due respect, I'm going to trust the DA, the vetting process of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the vetting process of the Ohio State University Buckeyes, and as well as the football opinions of people like Urban Meyer and Bill Belichick over some blogger whose entire life is built around getting more followers and claiming to be more rich than everybody else. So I think it's where you want to throw your lot in. If you don't want him as your coach, that's fine. Don't stand on some moral high ground and scream about an instance that the DA of Pennsylvania thought there was nothing there.
So we're going to have to agree to disagree on the totality of this, but I appreciate your engagement with it. One last question regarding Ohio State. The biggest debate in the kind of college football conversation right now is if Ohio State beats Wisconsin, then who would get that fourth playoff spot? Would it be Ohio State or Alabama? You talked about Alabama's resume not stacking up with Wisconsin's earlier. Do you think that that Alabama's in if Ohio State wins, or does it matter how stylistically Ohio State wins? What's your opinion here?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's going to be, I think it will be very hard for Alabama to get back into the top four if they're not in the top four this week. And just so whoever's listening to this, we are recording Tuesday morning, so it's prior to the rankings release. We don't know where Alabama is going to land. If Alabama remains in the top four this week, I think that opens up a real possibility that they will stay there regardless of what happens with an Ohio State win. Now, if Ohio State wins and it's in an impressive fashion, we've seen a couple of years ago that they were able to jump in there. Granted, they were just a one-loss team at that point. I will say this about Alabama. I don't think that this is an Alabama team that you can compare to last year's Ohio State team, because last year's Ohio State team had incredible wins. They had won at Oklahoma, which was a Big 12 champion. They won against Michigan, which at the time was in the top five in the country and wound up winning 10 football games. And they lost on a blocked field goal. And so that one loss, their resume was still very strong. Alabama's resume this year is very thin, and it's just not the year that the SEC has had historically. And so, you know, I think that they are in some trouble because of that. I think it has much more, to me, similarities to the 2015 Ohio State team, which was coming off a national championship, was an incredibly talented team, but it had not maybe played up to their standards the entire year, lost that game against Michigan State at home, and then ended up not going to the playoff because of it. I think that, personally, I believe that conference champions only should be allowed in the playoff. You should have to win your conference in order to go. I will be arguing for the Big Ten champ, whether it's Ohio State or Wisconsin, over Alabama. I think Alabama's resume is just not where it needs to be considered a playoff team, in particular when the last time we saw them on the field was a loss. I may be mistaken here, but the last time we saw a team compete for a national championship when the last game they played was a loss was 2001, when Nebraska lost to Colorado 62-36 and then went out and got blown out by Miami. I don't think anyone wants to see that. And I think if you looked at the resumes, Bama might just come a little bit short. Now, who knows with that committee? Because with six members of that committee, six of the 13 have either Southern geographic ties or ties to the ACC and SEC, they might just push the tide through.
I know you have a hard out in a minute. Is there anything we didn't discuss in the college football landscape, Wisconsin, Ohio State, playoffs, coaching carousel, that you think is really interesting that you want to discuss right now?
Oh gosh, I mean, no, this has been fun. I will tell you that, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise this year, I would just say, about the playoff expanding. But let's just put it this way. I would much rather have the argument between, for instance, Ohio State as a two-loss champ and Alabama as a one-loss team versus having the debate about, let's say, you know, UCF and TCU at 9-8. I think that it makes college football better. It makes the Iron Bowl that we just saw better. The fact that that could be the definitive game in Alabama's season in the wrong direction. I will just throw out this as a kind of a fix to college football. If you think that you want an expanded playoff, I think we can get to an expanded playoff without actually expanding the playoffs. And the fix is very easy. If all you do is take all the Power Five conferences, you get rid of divisions and just put the top two teams in the conference against one another in the conference championship game, well, then what you can do is you say you have to win your conference to go to the playoffs. You have five champions. Those games mean even more than they do now. And then you throw the worst champion out. So you still retain the importance of the regular season. You up the ante for the conference championship games. You get really the 10, you know, best teams in America or right around there as far as the top two seeds in each league, and you go from there. I think that would be a better system than what we have now.
Thank you, Joel. Appreciate your time. Big Ten championship game, yeah. Wisconsin, Ohio State, Fox, Saturday night. Go Badgers.
You got it. Have a good one, bud. Thanks.
All right, bye, Joel.
Familiar touch turns stranger.